Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. Talking sports with friends.
Fellas, just talk about sports.
Here it is, y'all. We're on the air. Sit on the sofa, throw your hands in the air. We're talking sports so you can come on and listen. NFL predictions, what you're missing? Nothing. We got you covered for college football, too.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. And we've got a special show talking NFL with a special guest. Ray, who's joining us today?
Yeah, we got a little reverb going on, so let's check out that audio. We got Tony Richardson, former NFL great fullback, who did some really, really big things in the NFL himself and also leading the way for some 1,000-yard rushers. And we're also going to be talking about the Sail Away Foundation, an organization that he's involved with that has a mandate of eradicating sex trafficking. So should be a very interesting and informative show. I think we might have our guest right now. Hello and welcome to Ray and Tay Today.
Hello, this is Tony Richardson. How are we doing today?
All right, Tony, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's actually a very nice, beautiful day here in New York City, so doing pretty good today.
Hey, Tony. Good to have you on with us.
Hey, it's great to be on.
Yeah, well, welcome. So this is Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Ray's, and I got my partner Tay, Eric Taylor. He's out in, he's out in Arizona. I'm here in New York. Huge Jet fan. So let's put that on the table.
Both of us.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much for coming on our show. Let's just get right into it. I wanted to talk some football, and then we can talk some of the great causes that you're involved with off the field.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. So, Tony, let's jump right into it. You blocked. I read this and I was like, and I knew you had a productive career, but I read this and I said, wow. So you blocked for a 1,000-yard rusher in an amazing 9 consecutive seasons. So you were opening the hole, you know, parting the Red Sea like Moses. So what was that like? What was that era like when you were just, you know, making it happen for 1,000-yard backs? It, obviously, a slightly different era in terms of the running back, but tell us what that was all about.
You know, it was actually pretty good. But I think, you know, a lot of times people are like, oh, man, you made all these great running backs and everything else. But I'm like, well, I had a guy by the name of Adrian Peterson. I don't think I really had to do too much because he was such a great running back. But, no, it was great. I mean, I think I attribute a lot of it to, you know, great offensive line play. I mean, think about, you know, when I was in Kansas City blocking for Priest Holmes and, you know, Larry Johnson. Man, I had Willie Rofe, Hall of Famer. I had Will Shields, Hall of Famer. And then, you look at Minnesota. I had, you know, Steve Hutchinson and Matt Burt. And, you know, you had some really good guys. But, you know, it was definitely a great run. Had some great running backs that I was able to work with and, you know, really built some great friendships. So it was, you know, definitely a good time for me.
That's awesome. And don't downplay your role, you know, 3-time Pro Bowler. So you mentioned those guys. So you've got Priest Holmes, Larry Johnson, Adrian Peterson, also our guy, Thomas Jones, in New York, 1,000-yard back.
Thomas Jones, yeah.
What is it that those guys had in common? Or, you know, how did you work together as the fullback and the running back? I mean, tell us a little bit about that camaraderie that you started to talk about.
Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, for me, you know, everyone's like, man, how did you play so long in the league? And I said, man, it's all about mentorship. And that's the thing I think that really helped me a lot because, you know, my first year, I jump into the locker room with the Dallas Cowboys, and I have Emmitt Smith as a mentor. Then I'm there all year long, obviously Emmitt Smith and Darrell Johnson. Then I go to Kansas City, and I look up, I got number 32, Marcus Allen. So it just, you know, you look around and you just like, you start to understand like how important it is to build that relationship with your running back. And like, so we spent a lot of time together, obviously on the field, but off the field. We studied tape together and all those different types of things that to when we went into the game, we pretty much could read each other and we pretty much knew what each other was thinking about. And I think that really helped us a lot in you know, some of the success we had.
That's amazing, and that's so important too. So, Tony, let me ask you this. What about with Kansas City, one of your former teams, what is happening there now in their running game? You see Kareem Hunt, what he did Sunday night, Patrick Mahomes. Yep. You know, how do you feel about this team? And do you think Andy's got them going in the right way? And will he stick to Kareem Hunt in the running game?
Yeah, you know, that's very interesting you asked that question, because I think what they're doing is obviously just a tad bit different. I mean, obviously it's electric. But, you know, the thing about it is with those RPOs, and for our listeners, RPOs are the run-pass option. That really, that style of running now, I mean, it's almost – I went to a high school football game on – obviously not comparing the Chiefs to a high school football game, but I went to a high school football game on Friday night, and I got a chance to talk to the offensive coordinator afterwards. He was – you know, I kind of understood it, but he was like, man, the way teams are running these offenses now, it's almost impossible for the defense to even, you know, to be right at any point in time. And so – what Andy Reid is, what he has these guys doing now is absolutely incredible. I mean, you look at Kareem Hunt, arguably, I mean, you talk about a guy that was a late-round draft choice, and arguably, to me, is probably one of the best running backs in the league. And, you know, with Patrick Mahomes and all those weapons, I mean, it's just it's pretty amazing. And to me, I'm not sure who's going to be able to stop that team when they really get rolling.
Definitely, it's so true. And then, you know, you think about your other former team, obviously, you know, the Vikings and the Jets. But just looking at the Jets and, you know, you with your work with SNY, how do you feel Sam Darnold and the coaching staff, Bowles, do you think that the Jets are headed in the right direction? And we can get to the Vikings as well. But did you like the Sam Darnold pick? And do you think that they're really just a free agency away from getting a number one receiver and maybe upgrading the running back? You know, they have good pieces in the secondary. What's your thoughts about Darnold, Bowles, and the New York Jets? You know, Jet fans really want to know, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's, you know, I'm so excited because that, you know, for me is, you know, I had the years with Rex Ryan, we had Mark Sanchez, and we had a veteran team. But I really like, and that's the thing about it, I'm so glad that, you know, that the organization is still behind Todd Bowles, because it takes a while. It takes, you know, a 3 to 4 year time period. I know in New York, we don't really like 2 years. We don't like 3 years. We want instant, you know, instant gratification. But I really do like the way the team is built. I think Sam Darnold is a franchise quarterback. I think we're definitely going to be able to put some pieces around him. And I agree with you 100% that, you know, we are probably, you know, a draft pick away or, you know, a few, you know, signings away from really getting this thing going, because all the pieces are there. You know, he's a young quarterback. He's going to make mistakes. But, you know, I was even at the game on Sunday, and when you have a young quarterback, you know, the drop passes and, you know, the mistakes and those kind of things, you can't do that to a young quarterback, because, you know, we need to – well, I can't say we because I'm not playing anymore, but you need to have guys – I know, right? I always get caught up in saying that. But you need to have, you know, guys that you're going to be – that he can trust, that, you know, when I give you the ball, which is a 5-yard pass, you got to catch it. You got to turn up and get the first down. You know, the pass protection, those kind of things. And obviously he's going to make mistakes because he's a rookie. But, you know, the things that you can fix, those are things I think that, you know, the teams need to concentrate on now.
Yeah, for sure. Tony, you're a young guy, but I got to say, we're football fans forever, so we saw you come and go in the NFL, but this is a whole different NFL. And, you know, what do you think about the evolution of the game in general, and specifically the fullback, the position you play? How has it changed? And would you like to play in this type of NFL, in today's NFL?
Because you were a good receiver, Tony, too. You were underestimated as a receiver.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, you look and, like I said, you start looking at some of these some of the offenses, and I did play a little tailback, but I don't know because the teams really don't use the fullback that much, and it's just simply because the way these RPOs and these run-pass options and the way of putting in a passing plays, but you know, I think I can probably hold my own. I did play a little bit of tailback. It's definitely it's an offense that it's wide open now. You know, a lot of spread offense. You know, a lot of different. You know, because we did, like in Kansas City, we did a lot of shifting and movement, and you know, it really kind of played into, you know, having a fullback, because then you can motion a fullback out, you can run flat routes and all those kind of things. But now it's kind of a whole different style. I think the physicality of the game now is probably something that I would probably get in trouble because even, you know, even Kareem Hunt, he's had two penalties where, you know, he has to get a couple extra yards and he lowers his head and he gets a flag for, which I don't even know what you call, targeting because you can't target your offense.
But, isn't that crazy, but yeah, right? Offensive guys getting penalties downfield.
I know.
Yeah,
right?
The rules are a little mess now.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing for me because, like, even a peelback block, and I get it. Those are some bottom blocks. I mean, I made money on those blocks. Like, you come up and, like, if a guy's coming to, you know, tackle, you can just peel back and kind of say hello to a few people who are now. You do that, you're going to be sitting on the sideline or your paycheck's going to be a little light. So it's definitely a different game, but I do understand. And the one thing we always want to focus on is, you know, player safety and the health and the welfare of our guys. But it's definitely a different NFL.
Well, speaking of it being a different NFL, when you look at the offensive stats and, you know, kudos to, you know, Drew Brees the last 2 weeks, you know, the 500 touchdowns, fourth all time, and then number one with yards. But for maybe the next generation, how are we going to be able to judge really where players are at when, you know, the NFL is bragging right now each week, you know, that's the highest scoring this and the most yards and breaking records. Do you think that this is going to start to skew sort of how you look at Pro Bowlers, Hall of Famers, NFL records? And do you also think it's worth it if you're making the game safer in terms of the concussions? You know, where do you stand on that and how do you view it overall?
Yeah, that's a very good question because it's interesting because that Tom Brady had just mentioned that, you know, because I think the question came up after Drew, you know, because they are breaking records in the passing games. You know, you got Patrick Mahomes going for what, four or five touchdowns per game, and you know, doing things that just hadn't been done before. But even Tom said it, and I think Tom is, you know, probably one, I think he's okay to kind of speak on this. I think he's done.
Yeah.
I think he's done okay in the league. So, but he said, quarterback play now is so much easier. And it's not like easier where you're downplaying what these guys and the work they put in, but it's definitely easier to read defenses the way, you know, these RPOs and, you know, all those kind of things. And so I don't know how you, it's me interested. It's a whole different era because, you know, the days of, you know, just lining up and, you know, normally you have like, you know, 200-300 yards total offense. Now it's like, oh man, we only have 500 yards of total offense today. Like, what do you mean you have 500 yards of total offense? That's like a Madden number. So it's definitely something I think is going to definitely, you know, it's going to be hard for the writers and the people who do make those Hall of Fame decisions to, but, you know, kind of quantify that. But I think it's all going to have to be by error because you can't look up and say, well, hey, guess what? Patrick Mahomes is better than Joe Namath. Like, okay, easy. You know what I mean? Because those are the kind of things that like, those are it's two different eras, and you can't.
Hey, listen, Tony, it was hard. It was hard for Ray and Tate to admit that Brady is passing. You know, probably has passed Montana now, which, you know, we had to give up. But Montana was still 4-0 and Mr. Clutch. You know, but you know, we gave it to Brady. You know.
Yeah,
we had to.
No doubt.
Yeah, we had to take the era into account, but still gave it to him. Yep.
Yep, and that's the thing to me because, you know, that number one question I always get is, man, you know, who do you think is the greatest running back of all time? I'm like, you know what, I'm not
that's
even going to get into that debate because you can't do it because you can't say that, you know, that, I mean, you look at some of the guys, I mean, the Walter Payton era, the Jim Brown era, you know, Tony Dorsett, like all those guys, even, you know, and the thing, and I, as a running back, I feel bad because, you know, I watched a documentary with O.J. Simpson, and I think as a young player, I forgot how good O.J. Simpson was. That guy, man, he was.
Oh yes, we refer to him often. Yeah. Orenthal James was a bad man, Tony.
Yeah.
Oh, I went back and started studying tape on him. I'm like, man, he can flat out get it done, and so that's why I never get into that conversation with who's the greatest running back because it's all on air, and you know, it's just totally different game.
Yeah, we had Eric Dickerson on the show, and he was talking about how O.J. hosted him when he visited USC, and he said people forget O.J. was a bad man. I mean, put the stuff off the field aside, strictly between the lines, he really revolutionized the game. So you're right. In every era, it seems like there's a couple of those backs out there. Speaking of which, what do you think about these new flock of backs, these really do-it-all backs? You know, we talked about Kareem Hunt. You got a guy like Alvin Kamara down there in New Orleans.
Yeah.
You got these backs that really can catch out of the backfield. Can, you know, Le'Veon Bell, he's sitting out. We need to get him back on the field. You know,
Gurley, Elliott,
these
the whole
guys,
bunch.
Yeah, these are some really well-rounded backs that can influence the game. Almost as much receiving out of the back. When you take a guy like Le'Veon Bell, he could be a receiver, frankly. So what do you think about the evolution of the position? And do you think do you like what you see from these guys and their versatility?
Yeah, you know, actually, I really do, because, you know, it's starting to get back to it's starting to get back to how it used to be. Because, you know, when I first came to the league, running backs really didn't come off the field. Like, you had the Emmitt Smiths that were first down, second down, third down, fourth down back. And then it went to a period where, okay, well, we got this guy, he's going to run on first down, second down. We got this guy, he can come in and do the third down. Then we got this guy, he's going to be this. And so I'm kind of liking that you have these guys that have that versatility. Because that's, to me, a true running back. And a guy I like to look at is a guy who can do it all. Because, you know, that's why when I came into the league, you know, Emmitt Smith and Marcus, they taught me, like, you know, you got to find a way to so the coaches can never take you off the field, versus just saying, okay, we got this guy, he can only do this. We got this guy, he can only do this. So I do like these. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, man, this guy here is like, he literally can run routes almost as good, if not better, than some wide receivers. So that's a plus. I do like watching these guys play.
You're so true. And, you know, but it does go back. When you talk about that third down back, it made me think of, you know, Ray and Tay, one of our favorites, was Eric Metcalf. He was one of those little scat third down backs. And remember, he would come in and, you know, and take things over. So, Tony, we know that you're close to the game. You still are very involved with it. And we got to ask you this. You can be honest or you can revise it. What was your initial Super Bowl pick, right? I think Ray had the Broncos. Would you have Ray, Broncos, Rams?
Yeah, because everybody was taking, you know, the favorites. I thought I was going to take the Broncos or the Chargers and the Rams.
Right. And I had the Steelers, and the Rams, but I didn't know Le'Veon would hold out to probably like week 10. But what was your pick, and if you had to change it, what would your pick be today?
All right, so my pick initially at the beginning of the season, just because as long as they got that quarterback down there and they got that coach down there, there's always a chance. I was going with the AFC. I was thinking the Patriots, because that's pretty easy to do. But then again, I was going rematch, because the Eagles at the beginning of the season on paper, you know, especially and as they started to continue to keep, you know, adding guys on the defensive line in off season, I was like, man, they're stacking team up, and that's really how they won it last year. And I'm like, okay, you got two good quarterbacks, Carson Wentz, and you got the Super Bowl MVP. So I'm thinking, like, man, it's going to be a chance that you have the replay. And now look at the season, everything is totally different. I mean, the Patriots are still putting it up, but their defense is not as good as I probably thought they would be. But, you know, the thing about it is they're always a second-half season team.
Adjustments, Tony.
They always do it. But then now, if you look at it, I mean, you'd kind of be – I mean, if I had to put my money on it, I'm not sure, because I like Kansas City. My only thing, I'm going to say Kansas City and the AFC, but the thing about it, you can't give up 40-some points a game.
They need a healthy Justin Houston and Eric Berry. It's a lot. It's a lot to ask for.
No doubt. And then the Rams, come on, man. Like, Ty Gurley, man, I wish I had him on my fantasy team. I mean, he's putting up bad numbers every single week. I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, this is insane. But, like, week in and week out, okay, I'm like, all right, he can't go off again this week. There you go, four touchdowns again. I'm like, man, this is crazy. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to go against the Rams, basically the way they built that defense. And, I mean, they're kind of clicking on all cylinders week in and week out. So, that's my NFC pick right now.
Yeah, and Sean McVay and Wade Phillips, I mean, they need to get a lot of credit, too. These guys are, you know, putting it together week in and week out. I got to tell you what, Tony, let the fans know. Give us a story about, you know, something funny or unexpected that happened in the huddle or in the locker room,
or something that the general
fans don't know about, but something that you experienced as a professional athlete.
Well, you know, I think some of the best, you know, huddle stories are just like, you know, you're in a crucial situation. Especially I played with Brett Favre, so he was a lunatic. But, you know, it was just funny, though. You know, just different things. And I think Brett had a unique way of, you know, if we were in a pressure situation or, you know, we really need to get a first down or whatever, and everyone's in the huddle, and they're, like, staring, and all of a sudden, Brett would be like, man, who farted in here? And I'm like, everybody just starts laughing, but then you just, like, you know, it just allows people to just take a deep breath and relax. Or Brett would just say, like, he'd be like, hey, man, you know, hey, man, we get out of here today, guys. We're going to go eat some Kentucky Fried Chicken. I'm like, dude, it's like 3rd and 2. You're going to talk about fried chicken. So he was a character to be around. Now, the locker room, is a whole different animal. So
that's a different beast.
I guess that's a whole different beast. The funniest stuff that used to happen was because one thing we always said there was a lot of things in the locker room. There was things you never talked about that were off limits. Like, you never talked about someone's kids. You never talked about someone's wife. But if someone came in there with the craziest outfit on, we literally, especially in New York, with Bart Scott, like, a guy would come in on game day, and he thinks he's going to the GQ, you know, to a runway. And he would go take a shower after practice. We would take his whole outfit and we'd put it on a string or a rope and tie it up and hang it all the way to the top of the ceiling. And just like that, like practice. So just right, some guy comes in, he's just getting out of the shower. He's just like, he's looking for his clothes. And he looks up, and it's like hanging in the ceiling. He's like, and he's thinking like, man, this is the best outfit I can put together, and I'm getting clowned on. So yeah, the locker room was a whole different animal.
Did you see Ryan Fitzpatrick when he wore Deshaun Jackson's outfit? That was hilarious.
See stuff like that. That's classic. Yeah. Just go get somebody's clothes and just put them on and walk out. And he's standing there like, man, where's my clothes? Yeah.
That is so great. So, but listen, we want to talk to you about, before we go off the field, I have one more quick question because you just had touched on it.
Yep.
You made a very honest comment about Todd Gurley and fantasy football. And we want to know because, Ray and I, we've been playing it for years, even back in the days with the USA Today when you had to get the stuff and do the stats yourself. How do NFL players, when you're even playing, and obviously now it might be different for you, but how do you guys view fantasy football, and do you guys play it in the locker room? Do guys like, I mean, because I can imagine it could be really fun, but I know some guys are so against it, but like, give us some insight.
Yeah.
What in your locker rooms, what do guys think about fantasy and what do they say about it?
Yeah, you know, I think it's kind of the evolution of the game. I think it's really grown now in the popularity and social media and all those kind of things. I think guys are, you know, because social media was just kind of starting to get popular as I was transitioning out. But now
right.
guys have, I mean, some of our players have like millions of followers, and it's like, hey, man, give me some fantasy points and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, for me, I think fantasy in itself has actually grown the game.
Yeah.
It's true. I guess I kind of in two folds. I think it's definitely grown the game. And you have more people watching the game that probably wouldn't watch it. You have more women watching. Because think about
women
who are just like, because they're fantasy team. They're like, hey, man, I got this guy. How do you know that? It's like, I play fantasy football. They really know their stuff. But then on the flip side, from a fan standpoint, or a true fan, like if I'm a Steeler and I grew up being a Steelers fan, you know, how in the world could I ever have a Browns player on my fantasy team? You know, I'm rooting for him. You know what I mean? So it's just like that part about it. I think you start to lose, like, you kind of start to lose a little bit of that, you know, I'm going to punch you in the face if you come off the sideline. Yeah.
And you only watch, and the other problem is you only watch offense, right? That's what I find myself doing.
It.
You see the red zone channel, and you're only focused on the offensive stats, and it's only half the game.
Yep, and that's the thing, because a lot of my buddies, they don't even watch NFL football. They literally just watch the red zone channel. That's all they watch.
Channel,
I'm just like, dude. Yeah, and I'm like, dude, enjoy the game. It's like, yeah, I am enjoying it. It's like, I got this fantasy team going. I'm like, all right, dude. I'm like, I'll talk to you later. But from that standpoint, I think as players and that, you know, not being in a locker room now, I don't know. I mean, I just think there's too many other things you have to concentrate on while you're playing and be worried about, like, how many fantasy points you got. But these guys do take pride in it. And I know in the beginning of the season, these guys are, like, you know, excited. They're the first pick of, you know, a lot of teams draft and those kind of things. And so,
right.
You know, but that's a whole different, the social media is a whole different, that's a whole, we got to say that for a whole different show.
I know.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Tony, we would love to talk football with you today, tomorrow, and every day. But I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the great things you do off the field. Because, you know, a lot of fans and a lot of people know athletes from in between the lines. But we know that you do some great work off the field. So talk to us a little bit about the Sail Away Foundation and some of the other stuff that you do off the field so that people know how well-rounded of a man and what you're contributing to society.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked me about Sail Away and the foundation, because it, you know, I guess I can share. Okay, I guess I can share a couple stories, and we'll talk about that. So my sister, she just transitioned out of the military, so she did 28 years and 4 deployments. And so as she started to transition out, she started to work with women that had been abused, sexually abused, physically abused, and even in the military, men. Because even, and this is something that you don't even think about, but there's a lot of men in that population who their wives are the head of the household, and they're being abused by their wives. And that was something like even eye-opening to me. So my sister started to make me more aware about it, just like from that, you know, that standpoint, just different things that our women and our young people are dealing with. And then there's an organization that I was working with, it's the Polished Man. And so Polished Man, what we would do is, it's pretty much for all men, and we would paint one fingernail, because we realized that one out of every five children in America has been sexually, physically, emotionally abused. And you start thinking about those numbers, and it's staggering. And so my friend MJ Pujon, she reached out to me and said, hey, there's a good organization. I think this is right up your alley. I think this is something you need to, you know, come hear about and learn about. And so I went to the first event, and it was the Stay Life Foundation. And just the presentation and the energy and the passion of the organization and what they stood for, because this sex trafficking is something that, and even for me, you know, I guess I'm naive and I didn't really quite understand it and quite know how big this is. Yeah, they played this. We had a chance to, we went down to Sarasota, Florida, and we had a chance to take an immersion tour. An immersion tour is a tour that really takes you to every touch point of how these young women get into the system as far as sex trafficking, the places where they kind of hang out, then how they get arrested and how they get really into the system. And then this organization, Sail Away, and how they can help these young girls and get them out of the situation. So we had a chance to like really see every touch point. But then even talking to the police officers, and they start telling us that they treat sex trafficking just as harsh as they do terrorism. And that's the thing that you start thinking about, like, man, didn't understand, and this is a $1 billion business, and the guys that are, you know, the sex traffickers or the pimps, as they call it, they're not the pimps that you see back in the old days on television with, you know, the gold chains and the fancy cars and all that kind of stuff. These guys now are doctors and they're lawyers,
sophisticated, right?
Very sophisticated. And it's just, you know, you start thinking, you start to hear these young girls' stories and understanding that some of these girls have been, you know, unfortunately, into the business by their parents. And the first person that ever tried to take advantage of them could have been a dad or could have been a mom. And then you hear their stories, and the girls, I mean, they all, almost all have the same story of, like, do you think this is a life that I chose for myself? Like, this isn't, like, I wasn't, I'm not, I mean, does this make me a bad child? And that, when I heard those stories, it's like, you know, because sometimes we live in a society where people judge people, and they see these girls on the streets, and like, you know, she's not this, she's not that. These are humans, these are people, and unfortunately, based on the area code or the zip code they were born in, those are the things that happened to them, and that's the life that was chosen for them. And then, but Sail Away is giving them an opportunity to get them out of that system and get them back into society and get them back with jobs and everything else. So I'm so happy to be, you know, involved in that organization. And it's probably the best thing that I'm involved in right now.
That's great, Tony. And we spoke to Elizabeth about it, and
yep,
we were amazed,
yep,
at all the different locations where, you know, the sex trafficking was the highest. Texas and Minnesota and Arizona. She,
yep,
said that she was coming out to Arizona to, you know, develop, you know, and bring Sail Away out here. And I'm out here, so I definitely plan on, you know, trying to help volunteer and link up with her. Do you also, when you, you know, choose these things or work with different organizations, does it always, or is it always something that, you know, touches your heart with, you know, like even the connection with your sister? Or have you even been involved, for example, with concussion studies or TBI or anything like that? What other aspects or what other interests do you have off the field that you might get involved in that you could share with us?
Yeah, you know, I really hadn't got into it. My buddy Nick Lowry, who obviously was a longtime chief and a New York Jet. He actually lives out in Arizona. So Nick has been kind of my person I've leaned on from that standpoint of just, you know, gaining more information on concussions and not even just concussions alone, but the research has been done that kind of help these guys who are dealing with problems and who are dealing with issues. And so those are, I kind of lean on him for that. But an organization I'm really proud to be a part of is Best Buddies. And so I'm actually on the board for Best Buddies. And so that's Maria Shriver and Anthony Shriver, the Kennedy family. And they so basically what happened is they created an organization to allow, you know, basically you have a buddy. So these young people, you know, with IDD, intellectual disabilities, they, you know, when they're in school, like think about, you know, them trying to just be, because all they want to do is inclusion versus exclusion. And they want to have, you know, just a person that maybe can help them get to homeroom, or maybe can help them get have somebody to sit down with at lunch, or just kind of get them through their day. And so that's what Best Buddies has created. It's created a buddy for, you know, these young people so they can, you know, live a productive life, you know, obviously while they're in school and then when they leave school. So I love Best Buddies. That's actually Tom Brady's organization. He's outwardly supported as well. And so I have a special heart for young people with disabilities, because at the end of the day, you know, they want to have jobs just like everyone else. They want to be able to raise a family. They want to be able to get married. They want to be able to live on their own. And so Best Buddies is something that's very near and dear to my heart.
Wow, that's great. That's awesome. And we really appreciate you telling us also the you know, the side of you away from football, because I think that the athletes today, because of social media, is so in the spotlight and everything gets scrutinized, and a lot of it is negative, you know, and if people don't understand that these are men and women, but you know, in the NFL, obviously it's men, that go out there and they play, but they also have lives away from football, and they do things for their community, and they do things for the children or the elderly or the disadvantaged or whatever. And I don't think that enough of these stories come to light. And so we thank you for sharing that. And what do you think about it? Just on a parting note, I mean, what does the NFL or what do people need to do to hear more about some of the good things that these athletes do?
Yeah, and that's great, because what I do now, you know, I work with my department's Legends community with the NFL. And that's one thing we want to do is, number one, we want to make sure our guys are taken care of, and they're, you know, it's the NFL Brotherhood, and so we want to make sure our guys are taken care of and they're anything they need, any way we can support them, that's what we try to do. But on the other side, we want to be into the business of storytelling. We want to be able to, you know, because all our athletes, you know, because you hear so many negative stories and, you know, this guy living under a bridge or this guy living, you know, in a hotel room, and, you know, all the guys aren't like that. There's a lot of guys who are doing some positive, great things in the community. We want to be able to tell their stories. And so that's one of the aspects we do with Legends Community is, we actually have a Instagram handle, which is NFL Legends, and it's what we do. We just really storytell and allow people to see that, because it is negative. The thing about it, but I think that's just society though. You turn on the news.
Oh yeah, it's negative all time.
Yeah, you live in New York City, and it's like I turn on the news. I'm like, it's like, okay, there's a stabbing, there's a shooting, there's a mugging. You get like 10 things happen before you even get to anything that's positive. So. That's what sells newspapers, and that's what drives ratings, and that's unfortunate, but that's one thing that, you know, our guys are doing some amazing, great things, and that's one thing we want to do is just highlight that. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you, Tony. Listen, before we let you go, one funny thing. Tell everybody the truth, man. Does Kansas City have the best barbecue or what? Because I haven't tried it. That's what I hear. Eric Dickerson says it's Texas. But let us know, Tony.
Yeah,
is it Kansas City or what?
Well, you know what? And I'm kind of biased, because we actually have we have the official Kansas City Chiefs barbecue in Long Island City called John Brown Smokehouse. So a little plug for the restaurant. And so if you're in New York, come to John Brown Smokehouse to get some barbecue. But it's very interesting, because I think it's two different styles, almost like football, two different eras. So I think, you know, we're in Kansas City, it's more based around the sauce. And I think in Texas, it's more of like a vinegary, like it's more of a dry rub. So yeah, that's a tough. So those are done. If you can get two grandmas in the room, and you can start a fight if you start saying. One grandma will be like, "No, baby, my barbecue's better than hers," and then we don't want to see grandma's fighting. So that's a conversation that we gotta have a taste test. That might start a brawl. That might not be a brawl we want to see.
Well, that's true. And you know, the Carolina people, like you said, the vinegar base, the Carolina people will throw their 2 cents in there, too.
Exactly. Yep. Then you got Alabama. You got, because in Birmingham, they got, I can't think of the name of the place down there in Tuscaloosa. They got a place down there. They can flat get down, too. So it's a tough, yeah. I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to go through the airport and some. already.
All right. So you're basically saying I shouldn't start no mess. Don't start no mess now.
I'm not going there. Not at all.
Well, thank you, Tony. Listen, this has been fun, and you are welcome to come back anytime. You know, we're diehard, you know, NFL fans, but we're also fans of, you know, humanity and positivity and giving back and, you know, working with kids. And we both do a lot, you know, working with kids and charities in our personal lives. And so we just appreciate you doing that and just, you know, continue on with that. And maybe we can talk to you around the Super Bowl, man. You know, this is going to be an interesting season, how it plays out. So, you know, you're always welcome.
That sounds good. All right,
yeah, this is great. Thanks, Tony. This was our pleasure. And keep up the great work off the field. We really look forward to hearing more stories and some of the great work you're doing.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. Talk to you later.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Tony Richardson. All right.
Wow, that was great. That was awesome. That's awesome. You heard how he shied away from the barbecue. He didn't want to get in the middle of that.
That's serious. Yeah. Listen, you talk about barbecue. You saw what Eric Dickerson was saying. Those are fighting words with the barbecue folks.
Oh yeah, remember we were talking about the dry rub? He's like, no, that. I was like, okay, that's Texas style. Let me not mess with that. Because you said about barbecue sauce, and he said, no, this is Texas, man. This is dry rub.
Eric corrected us.
Spicy.
He corrected us definitely. So that's great. It's awesome. And I love his, you know, insight just with, you know, obviously the individual teams, the era and just the style of play, you know, and it's so true. So, you know, I think we're almost headed to that halfway point, you know, and, you know, obviously the trades going down, the Cowboys getting Amari Cooper and stuff. And, you know, we joked with Tony about the Super Bowl, but, you know, I don't know. Looking at it, you would think maybe Patriots Rams or Chargers Rams. It's going to play out in an interesting way. I definitely would say that.
Well, you know what might be a wild card, although I don't think he gets moved, but Patrick Peterson, where does he go? I don't think Arizona's going to let him go because they'd have to get a King's ransom for him. If Amari Stoudemire, look where my head is at. If Amari Cooper.
The Saints could definitely use him, Ray.
Yeah, you have Patrick Peterson. Immediately, your defense upgrades. But we'll keep an eye on that. And, you know, Ray and Taylor, we'll talk some football. We're also going to talk some basketball. We got the baseball. We got the World Series starting tonight. So there's a lot going on in the sports world.
What's your pick? Red Sox, Dodgers, who you got?
You know what? They won 108 games. They're a special team. They're having a special season. I got to think the Red Sox, I think they win in five. I think they just take care of business.
I got Red Sox in six, but I'm rooting for seven games. And, you know, I don't really like either team, but you're right. The only problem with the Red Sox, not the greatest bullpen. So if the Dodgers can get clutch timely hitting and maybe push them to have to bring starters back in, or if they can get to Barnes and those guys, that's where the Dodgers have a chance. But they you know, they got to go pitcher for pitcher, and they got to go, you know, they got to get clutch hitting. It's going to be fun either way, you know.
We'll see. Yeah. So a great next couple weeks, right? We got the NFL playoff, you know, starting to shape up the playoff race. We got basketball. Your Lakers are 0-3. We got the spitting incident, the fight, the suspensions, the World Series. So a lot going on. We'll talk about it in some future episodes of Ray and Tay, but this was awesome. It was great to have an NFL Pro Bowler talking sports, talking football, and talking off the field. It was awesome.
Yeah. All right, we are out.
Peace.
See ya.